season 5, episode 2 of Game Misconduct. Welcome, I'm CT here with Dory.
Hey.
You can find us on all social media at Game Miz with the Z Conduct. We're jumping right in with our guest, whom we love. We can't say it enough. Dory, you want to give a nice intro?
Yeah, Lightning Insider's Eric Erlandson, who also has his own show on Lightning Power Play, which we're definitely going to talk to him about in a little bit. But he has been nice enough and gracious enough to finally come on and get us over with, right, Eric? You just get it over with, and we won't bother you again until like the postseason.
Bother me all you want, ladies.
Yeah, Eric Erlandson.
How does everybody follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, find me at Eric, and it's E-R-I-K. Let's make sure we get the spelling right.
Yeah.
Eric _ Erlandson, and it's E-R-L-E-N-D-S-S-O-N. You can also find me on Facebook. I have a professional page at facebook.com/lightninginsider.
Ooh, so fancy. So fancy. All right, so let's get into the preseason. Because I know we've officially started the 2018-19 season, but let's kind of just talk about the preseason. I think it was Bob McKenzie.
Pierre LeBrun. And I know you saw this tweet because it caused like a firestorm on Twitter. And he just, all he said, basically said was, you know, I'm trying to think of like the exact terminology, but it was like 1 week in, I'm kind of over this already. And it really is the shortest preseason. The camp is very short as well. I'm wondering why it feels so long. My thing watching last night's, you know, not last night,
the home opener
is the last couple seasons we've opened against the Panthers, correct?
Yes. Last year was back-to-backs as well.
Exactly. And this year we're doing, well, we don't have a back-to-back, but, you know, hosted them for the opener. And how many times do we play them this preseason?
3.
Yeah.
It's a little much for me.
In the week leading up to.
And if you watch the game, and this is just, like I said, my opinion from what I was watching in the whole, especially in the first maybe period and a half, they looked bored. The Lightning looked bored. Like, And I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe if they kept seeing, you know, they see these guys every other hour, you get kind of bored with them. I don't know. I just think it's a little much. And it's not the Lightning's fault.
No.
It's not the Panthers' fault. I just don't know why they make these schedules this way.
Yeah, it's. I think a big part of it is nobody likes to play games in October. League-wide, this is something I've been told before. Mm. And the reason why is because it's the start of football season. You're right in the heart of football season.
Oh.
And that's not just here in Florida. Obviously, this is a football-crazy state. It's the most popular sport in this state down here. And that's why you see a large number of, the exact opposite. Usually the fewest games teams will play will be in October. And I think that's a big reason for it. So I think from a league's perspective, if you're looking at it, well, if the Florida teams, quote-unquote, aren't going to draw, well, why not let them play in October when the excitement is new, especially at the beginning of the season?
Oh.
So I don't know if that's the case. That's a conspiracy theory that I've heard before. The teams are in control of their preseason schedule, but that preseason schedule came out in, I don't know, June? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the preseason schedule actually came out before the regular season schedule. So, you know, these two teams had these three games set up already, and for them it's ideal because they don't have to travel far. They don't have to get on a plane and get somewhere. In both cases, both teams bust from Tampa to Orlando for the game at Amway Center. So there's a lot of logistical things on why they play each other so much during the preseason, but yeah, you know, maybe you don't want to see the same opponent 4 times in a row, including when one of them is the start of the regular season, unless it's a playoff series.
Yeah, and that I understand. I totally, you know, I was kind of thinking like, well, duh. I mean, travel is obviously going to be the number one point for, you know, these two teams. But then, I think it's the fact that you go right from playing them in preseason right into the season opener for the two years in a row. And I think it becomes kind of like meh.
I sometimes feel like they're trying to force the in-state rivalry on us a little bit. I did go to Orlando. I did drive to Sunrise for the games. So I saw them just as much as the Lightning did leading up to the home opener. For me, it was like, okay, maybe their rosters still weren't firmly set. But I agree with you. The I feel like the preseason is a little too long. I don't know why I feel like it is. Maybe just because of the anticipation, and I'm just like, let's get it going. But I do feel like maybe it helped in the season opener to kind of have known your opponent by then, but then maybe they are a little bored. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talk about the training camp being so long in hockey because it's by far the shortest of any of the sports. I mean, we're talking, for most teams, it's 3 weeks from the first reporting day of camp to the first regular season game. Now, a couple days longer for Tampa and Florida. They were actually the last two teams in the league to start their regular season, and some teams already had a couple of games in by that point. But, yeah, it's only 3 weeks from training camp to the start of the regular season, which I love. I love the fact that it's that short. But, this is not the first time I've heard somebody say it's too long. And I think a big reason for that is because sports is such a science nowadays, certainly compared to what it used to be. You know, training camp used to be when you got into shape. Well, if you're using training camp to get into shape, mm-hmm. you're not playing in the NHL anymore. It's
right.
You have to train during the summer. So these guys come in such great shape
right.
That they're ready to go really from the start. So really all they need, veteran guys anyway, all they really need is a couple of games to get the feel back of the puck on the stick and, you know, taking a hit along the boards and, you know, those things to kind of get your timing back a little bit. You know, the coaches and management obviously want those early games to evaluate some of the younger players to see where they're at against somewhat NHL caliber competition. But yeah, I've heard other people say that they feel training camp tends to be or has the feel that it's too long, and maybe because there's so many games crammed in there.
Yeah, I think it's maybe just the repetition of the same
team. Well, in that first week, you know, Tampa had 4 games in 5 nights.
That's, you know, tough.
Back-to-back against Carolina, back-to-back against Nashville. So maybe that adds to the feel because they play so much. And it's not like, you know, we think of football training camp where it's, you know, it's 3 weeks of camp and then you get the exhibition games, and the exhibition games are only once a week. I don't know, maybe that adds into it.
Yeah, and maybe it's our problem, in air quotes, because we didn't have a lot of turnover of the team, and that kind of is a segue into opening night and the lineups and everything. Like, we didn't have a lot of new players to incorporate into our lines and figure out where they fit. So I guess we're very lucky. It's the same team, basically, we've seen for the last two seasons.
Yeah, a lot of familiarity. You know, so there weren't a whole lot of jobs open. This wasn't a training camp where, you know, you had 4 or 5 people competing for maybe one spot, legitimately for one spot. We could have penciled in, I think, for the most part, what this roster was going to look like when the season started. You know, a couple of new faces with Matthew Joseph making the team out of camp, and then Danik Martell being picked up off of waivers from the Philadelphia Flyers a couple of weeks into camp. So, you know, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe because we pretty much knew what the team was going to look like, we didn't need to see all these preseason games, and we didn't need to look at, you know, so many different players. That you know, it was just the veteran guys that we wanted to see get back and get ready, you know, for what we expect to be another successful season.
Yeah, and so let's get into the pomp and circumstance of opening night, which I thought was – you know, of course, well done by the Lightning. You can see they have some new fun gadgets that they probably held over from the All-Star weekend. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but sitting in the stands where I sit, it was a heck of a lot brighter in that arena.
Oh, really?
I think they have new lighting around. Yeah. Okay, so it, like, the ice is like fluorescent now. Like, my eyes, I can't see.
It was hard for me to see that.
It looked really, I thought the arena looked really great. Mm-hmm. I would have liked the guys to look a little better coming out of that tunnel. But let's talk about the lineups last night. So you've got, well, taking the opening faceoff was our second line, actually. Braden Point, Andre Palat, and Yanni Gourde. You know, we're used to seeing them play together. But they put Anthony Cirelli and Alex Killorn on a line with our new guy, Matthew Joseph, who you referenced earlier. What did you think of his first NHL game, other than, you know, them making him do a lap as soon as he got out of the tunnel?
The initiation.
Yeah. What did you think of his first game in the NHL? And his dad, his parents were sitting a couple rows behind me, and they were, gosh,
proud.
At the end of that game, you just unabashed pride from those parents.
Oh, I can imagine. And his younger brother, you know, was a first-round draft pick of the Arizona Coyotes, so you know, pretty good bloodlines there with the Joseph family.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought Matthew looked nervous in the first period. You could kind of tell that it was his first NHL game, and it's totally, totally expected from a player in that situation, you know, at the age of 21 to be nervous. I mean, it's the NHL. You're realizing your dream, and, you know, he looked like he fumbled a puck a little bit, but what was just awesome to see was how he steadied himself, and I thought from the second period on, you could make the argument that he was their best player. You know, he was in on the forecheck. He was using his speed. He drew a penalty while killing a penalty that, you know, negated the final 30 seconds of a Florida power play, and he had a fantastic scoring chance coming down the left wing side and just missed the top of the net for his first NHL goal. You know, and he earned the coach's trust pretty quickly, and, you know, we certainly saw this throughout the preseason. You know, he played in six of the seven games and performed extremely well. And last night, I think from that point, from the start of the second period on, you know, he was getting power play time. He was not working with the power play units this week in practice. So that was an in-game change.
Wow.
To put Matthew Joseph out there on the second power play unit because he earned it. He was playing that well, and he performed so well. You know, and look, young players like this, and John Tortorella used to say this all the time, when they come up, and in this case it's a season opener, when they come up, there's adrenaline, they're at the peak of themselves, and it usually takes about two or three, sometimes four games, and there'll be a little dip, and it's totally expected. And then the question is, where do they plateau, and then how do they get back up? So for game one, I thought Matthew Joseph was terrific. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fantastic sign for a player who surprised, I think, a lot of people in camp. Not that we didn't know he was capable of doing this, but he performed so well in camp. He forced his way onto this team. So now let's see how he builds off of this game and kind of where he, you know, continues to progress as the season starts to go along here.
We are talking with Eric Erlandson of Lightning Insider and Lightning Lunch on the Tampa Bay Power Play channel. You know, talking about the young guys, because I thought they both stand out, but to your point that you said about Tortorella set, you know, you got to expect it. Cooper has always had a way of kind of giving these guys a little bit of, I think, more trust than other coaches put in their young guys. We saw it last year with Sergachev. If you remember, I think it was even maybe one of the playoffs games, how well Sorelli was playing, and he kept getting asked about it. He's like, yeah, he's playing great. Move on. He's, you know, he kind of kept giving that answer. Like, what do you want me to say? The kid's playing good. He's a kid, you know, kind of, you know, you were there. But he does give them a little bit of kind of like, okay, let's see what you got. Let's put you. But he doesn't kind of like put too much on them, I feel. I feel like he kind of lets them kind of like, well, this is the rope I'm giving you. Okay, yeah. And you're taking it and you're playing well. Good. Great. Wonderful.
That's exactly what it is. It's incremental challenges. And, you know, just using Joseph as an example here in the preseason. Okay, he gets in preseason game one. He gets to play on a second line. Braden Point, and I think it was Point, Palat, and Joseph in that that first preseason game. Okay, he played well. So the next night, he puts him in a different role in the second preseason game. You know, you play on a checking line. Okay, the next game, okay, you pass that test. Let's put you on the fourth line. How are you going to perform the fourth line? And he just kept stepping up to those challenges, and that's something that, you know, this coaching staff certainly does with players. You know, let's look at Andre Vasilevsky a couple of years ago when Ben Bishop was injured in December and Vasilevsky had to be the guy. They challenged him everywhere. You know, how are you going to perform with four consecutive starts? How are you going to perform starting on consecutive nights? Let's see how you handle the challenge. And that's one of the great strengths, I think, of John Cooper in his coaching style, is that he doesn't force feed stuff. He doesn't throw these young players right out there and to see how they do. Even Braden Point was in this situation his rookie year. You know, he didn't become the team's, you know, basically shutdown center. He was kind of given the opportunity, okay, let's build on that. How do you perform here? Okay, let's build on that. How do you perform now in this role? So it's definitely something that this staff has done since John Cooper's been in charge, and if they feel that the player has handled it, well, they give them a little bit more and then see where the limit is, and if they have to pull back, they pull back.
All right, so we're talking with Eric Erlandson of Lightning Insider. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more Game Misconduct. We're back with more Game Misconduct and our amazing guest, who we just love so much. I could talk to you for days about stuff. Eric Erlandson from Lightning Insider and Lightning Lunch on Lightning Power Play. So let's talk about, we talked about the forwards and, you know, Matthew Joseph coming in, and Adam Ernie also earned a spot on the opening night roster, and Corey Conacher. But, you know, we know that we've got Ryan Callahan and Tyler Johnson kind of waiting in the wings, and when they're going to be healthy. How do you think all of that is going to shake out?
Yeah, it'll be interesting with Johnson, because I think under normal circumstances he could have played in the season opener, but with a gap between game one and game two, there was no reason to put him in the lineup, you know, given the extra day's rest to be able to get ready. Because by the end of practice last week, he was out of the red no-contact jersey. He was cleared for contact and ready to go. So I would not be surprised to see him back in the lineup here really, really soon. And when he does, you know, you figure he jumps back on that line with Andre Palat and Braden Point, because those three were together for good portions of the tail end of last season. So, you know, now that – what do you do with Yanni Gourde now? Because Matthew Joseph sure looked comfortable on that third line. And he's played with Anthony Cirelli in Syracuse last year. They played on a line quite a bit together last year. So there's some instant chemistry there. And then you have Alex Killorn. So what are you doing with Alex Killorn? I mean, these are good problems to have.
Right.
You know, you want this type of problem. You know, that just shows you the depth that this this team has on the NHL roster, let alone in the organization on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so who comes out of the lineup? First of all, you get to figure out who comes out of the lineup, and then how do you rotate the lines back around? So that'll be really interesting to see how the coaching staff handles that situation. And then when Callahan comes back, and he's ahead of schedule, John Cooper came out and said that he is ahead of schedule. Callahan has also been cleared for contact, which is a little bit sooner than we would have expected. He had the shoulder surgery in May. He was expected to miss, you know, 4 to 5 months. So we're on the short end of that time frame. So there's a good chance he could be back by the end of October, where originally we thought he was going to be out until November. So now all of a sudden you activate him, you have to clear somebody out of the roster. So who's that going to be? Is it, you know, I thought Corey Conacher was effective last night in exactly the way he can play in the season opener, you know, the way that he can kind of agitate and use his speed. And, you know, so Corey Conacher, I thought, played really well, you know, but he requires waivers to go down. A guy like Adam Ernie as well, and he's a young player. He's still just 22, 23 years old. You know, he requires waivers. So what do you do? Matthew Joseph is the only forward that does not require waivers in the way he's played. You're not even taking him out of the lineup, let alone thinking about sending
right.
him to Syracuse. So interesting decisions ahead. Sometimes these things answer themselves, especially with Callahan, since we're still looking, you know, a couple of weeks down the road at least before he has an opportunity to think about getting back into the lineup for this team. So sometimes things work themselves out. But they're difficult decisions for the coaching staff when you have this type of depth. And knowing that you have a regular in Tyler Johnson coming back soon, and then another regular in Ryan Callahan coming back a little bit later down the road.
You kind of alluded to the coaching staff. We haven't really talked about that. Rick Bowness no longer with the team, and Jeff Halpern, and you've got to help me with the other assistant's name.
Derek LeBond.
Yes. It's French, and I'm not very good at it. what do you think of the – because now there are four guys on the bench – what do you think of what you've seen so far?
Yeah, we'll see. Usually they like to have an eye in the sky, and I think John Cooper likes to see how things feel on the bench before making a decision who ends up being that eye in the sky up in the press box and communicates with the bench in that capacity. But, you know, they change things around. You know, the penalty kill was a concern last year after finishing 29th overall in the league during the regular season. So that's a big reason why Rick Bowness was let go. In comes, and you promote Todd Richards, who did a masterful job for 2 years with the power play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, turned it from what was a momentum killer at times before he took it over to an absolute strength on this team in the way that he ran it. So now he moves into the position that Bowness had held, where he's now in charge of running the defense on the bench and the penalty kill. His job is on the penalty kill. And, you know, for game one, they killed off all five Florida power plays,
mm-hmm.
and Florida looked pretty dangerous at times. They had that unique five-forward power play setup, was their number one unit. Killed them all off, gave up 12 shots. They gave up a ton of shots on it. But most of those came in that one third period power play when Tampa had already tied the score, and Vasilevskiy was unbelievable during that stretch. So, I think the hope is that Todd Richards can kind of find some of the same ways to correct and strengthen the penalty kill the way he did with the power play. So he moves over. That means Jeff Halpern, who we know very well from his time he spent here, was a terrific penalty killer in his days. He takes over the power play, which I think is a very cool sort of unique aspect that a guy who was such a good penalty killer is in charge of a power play because he knows how to attack a power play. So,
reverse psychology, I like it.
I think it's a fantastic sort of concept there. So he's got the keys to that portion. He wants to make sure that, I talked to him about it before the season opened. He just wants to make sure he gives it structure. He doesn't want to mess with it too much. He just wants to make sure he's given, the players the right concepts and the right ideas to be in the right positions because it's such a, both those top power play units are just filled with players who can fill the back of the net with pucks. So, and then Lalonde, he kind of takes over the role that
Brad Lauer.
But he'll take over that role and kind of fill in some of the gaps there on the coaching staff. So different look, different. We'll see how things shake out with who ends up on the bench. But yeah, there were four on the bench for the season opener, which is a little unusual.
Yeah, and not only did we kill five power plays, but we also scored a shorty, which was awesome. So and it's crazy that all the talking heads on NHL Network and NHL Radio, they're analyzing the Lightning and, picking them to be a favorite for the postseason and everything. And they're like, well, the only thing they really need to fix is special teams and really their penalty kill. And the first game out of the box, it was very reassuring to see that.
Yeah, it was a positive sign. Obviously, it's a long season. Their second half of last year is when their penalty kill really kind of fell apart a little bit, for lack of a better phrase there, as teams start to figure out and figure out your tendencies and then who are you going to have in the penalty kill? I mean, I thought it was, Anthony Cirelli is the guy who led all forwards in ice time in penalty kill last night, which might be a surprise, but really shouldn't be because he did that in the playoffs too. He led all their forwards in ice time on the penalty kill during the postseason as well. So Matthew Joseph got a lot of penalty kill time. Yanni Gord, who I think is terrific at killing penalties, didn't do a ton of it last year, was back on that penalty kill unit. And again, we'll see because Tyler Johnson kills penalties, Ryan Callahan kills penalties. So we'll see how that personnel all shakes out once those players are ready to come back. But, a couple of different looks on the penalty kill. And, you want to use speed. I think that's, we talk about speed so much with this team and it's a strength. We usually only tend to think about speed in the offensive parts of the game. How do you push the puck? How do you push the pace? Well, you also have to utilize your speed when you're defending as well, whether it's a back check, whether it's chasing pucks down in the defensive zone. And the same thing on the penalty kill. I mean, look at it last night. The season opener, Ryan McDonough makes a fantastic pass to break out Cirelli and Killorn on a 2-on-1 because they use their speed mm-hmm. and push their pace on it. So, speed also comes into play on the penalty kill. Speed and quickness to cover spaces on the ice to cut off passing lanes and shooting lanes and stuff like that. So that's an attribute that I think Tampa wants to utilize a little bit more when they're killing penalties.
We're speaking with Eric Erlandson of Lightning Insider and Lightning Lunch on Lightning Power Play. So I feel like one of those things that we've talked about for the last three or four seasons is about how we have to shore up our defense. Well, I'm pretty sure of our defense right now, and especially our goaltending. Andre Vasilevskiy really kept us in that home opener. I think probably the score should have been like 4-0 at the end of the second. But he really kept us in that game. So I'm feeling really good about the back end right now.
Yeah, and you should. I mean, you got a Norris Trophy winner there in Victor Hedman. You've got Ryan McDonagh now for a full season after coming over in the trade with the Rangers at the trade deadline in February. You've got another year older of Mikhail Sergachev. You think he's ready to take the next step and take on some more minutes after playing about 15 or so on average last year as a rookie. You got the steady Anton Strahlman. You've got very steady Braden Coburn and Dan Girardi. So you know what your defense is going to look like. You got Slater Cuckoo in there as well. So you know what they're going to look like. You know what you have. And then the guy behind is the key to everything. I mean, Andre Vasilevskiy was fantastic in stopping 42 shots against the Panthers there on opening night. Stopped both guys in the shootout to lead them to the shootout victory. There's There's no concern with 88. There's no concern with 88 in that. You know what you're going to get on a pretty consistent basis. And, you know, I think what you have to be excited about with Vasilevsky is he's such a hard worker. You know, we've seen this. They had to pull him back sometimes because, you know, he admitted to feeling a little bit of fatigue in the second half last year. Now he has that year under his belt. I mean, we get spoiled. That was his first year as a full-time starter in the NHL. So now he knows how to handle that. So now he knows how to handle himself a little better mentally and physically and, you know, when it's okay to pull back and maybe take a morning skate off or take a practice day off as a goaltender. So I don't think there's as much concern at all in that position as maybe there might have been last year because, you know, you feel pretty good about what you have.
I want to ask you about Sergachev, since you kind of touched on a little bit. Usually it's kind of the rule of thumb or whatever in the, you know, hockey encyclopedia or what have you, that it takes defensemen 2 to 3 years of playing in the NHL to finally, you know, kind of get their legs under them and kind of solidify who they are. Some take, you know, some are a little sooner, some are a little late bloomers. Sergachev came out last year as a teenager and just kind of blew everybody's mind. And he had I don't know if you want to call it a dip. I don't know if you want to say that. But there was a period of time to where you kind of saw his productivity kind of fall off slightly, and then he got it back. What do you expect to see from him in year two when you consider what we saw from him his rookie year?
Well, first of all, we'll go back to that feeding the young players challenges here and here, see they handle it. And that's, you know, you want to look at an area where Sergachev might have stepped back last year. Well, it was when they started trying to give him 19, 20 minutes a night to see how he handled it, right?
Okay. Yeah.
You could see the drop-off, so you pull it back. And that's exactly how you build confidence and you build success in young players. So now he can take all of that, and he was fantastic in the second half of the year, probably from about March on. They put him on the right side, which is his offside. He's a left-handed shot. Playing the right side. I've talked to Brian Engblom. He loves Mikhail Sergachev on the right side. And he was great in the playoffs. And that and that was a terrific sign that a teenage defenseman, 19, just turned 20 years old, is playing that well in the postseason at that age. This kid is he's so hungry to learn. I mean, that's one of his greatest strengths, is that he's absorbing knowledge anywhere and anywhere he can. And that just fuels him so much that I see big things for him in year two compared to year one.
Good.
You know, I think that he could probably handle top 4 minutes right now as you start to maybe incrementally add to what's on his plate. But you're right. It does usually takes defensemen, and the old adage is about 250 to 300 games to really feel comfortable with how the game comes at you. And it's more in the defensive zone, especially for the player of his offensive capabilities, because he's a wizard with the puck on the blue line. We saw it in the season opener. He made a fantastic move to clear up space for himself. I believe it was on the play, actually, that Roberto Luongo got hurt, where Sergachev just made a quick move to create space for himself and jump down low and get a shot on net. But it's the reads coming at you in your defensive zone. That's the biggest area where defensemen have to learn and get used to, and the only way to do that is to see it coming at you. So, year two, he's not near that 250, 300 game mark. He won't get that for a couple of years, but he accelerates his learning curve on his own because of how much he wants to learn. So to me, that's you'll see a little bit more of a role handed to Mikhail Sergachev this year.
And he gets to learn from Anton Strawman, who I think is so vastly underrated when you talk about great defensemen. He's smart, he's calm, he's poised. He always makes, I think, really, he makes very smart decisions. He always seems to have, like, a great, like, awareness of what's going on. And that's got to be a great benefit to a really young guy that wants to learn.
Yeah, you know, I always like to say with Anton Strawman, he's poise and patience personified on the ice. He just makes the right reads. He knows how to make the right pass. Very rarely does he panic with the puck. And when you can watch a player like that, and, you know, he was partnered with him for a good portion of last year as well, but when you can watch that, you understand, and you hear players talk about this all the time, there's a point where the game slows down for them, and that sort of seems ludicrous for us to say it because the game is so fast-paced, but for a player, there is a point where the game slows down, and I think Anton Strawman has mastered that. There's no doubt about it. And if you can watch, a defenseman with his sort of poise and understand that, okay, I have an extra second. I have an extra second and a half. Let's make sure I have the right read and make the right play. And that's why Anton Strawman has become such a steady, strong presence on the blue line here.
All right, so we're speaking with Eric Erlandson of Lightning Insider and Lightning Lunch. We're going to take another quick break and come back. We're going to do like a rapid fire, which I think one of the topics is really going to set Eric off, which he's a very calm and cool, collected man, and I think this one might put him over the edge, so we'll be right back. We're back with more Game Misconduct and our guest, Eric Erlandson. Okay, so we're going to wrap it up here with a little rapid fire. So let's talk about your own show that you have on Lightning Power Play. It's every weekday?
Yeah, Monday through Friday. It's called Lightning Lunch. We kicked off in season opening week, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. every day. It's live. It is live from the arena. I don't know if anybody heard the construction sounds going off. We're installing those brand new LED lights last week while we were there. So, yeah, it's great. We have all kinds of guests come in. We previewed the divisions last week. We'll start to have some formatted shows in terms of taking a look at the farm system, and we'll take a look at Syracuse, and we'll have some alumni come on the show. So we get a lot of really cool things planned. And the great thing is that the subscribers to my site, lightninginsider.com, have the opportunity to be interactive in terms of potentially getting a chance to submit some questions that we'll ask the players and air on the show. Once the studio gets built, then there will be a studio at Amalie Arena. At some point, they'll be able to come in and sit down in the and while I'm doing the show and maybe put them on the air. So a lot of cool things that we have planned for this new show, Lightning Lunch, this year.
That's awesome. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So let's talk about the other thing. You kind of broke this news a little bit. Kaylee Chelios, we love her. We think she does such a great job at home games and on all the video packages that they put on Lightning, TampaBayLightning.com. But she's kind of expanding her role a bit, which is very exciting.
Yeah, very cool opportunity for her. She's doing some radio color analysts. Sitting alongside Dave Mishkin, she did it for three of the road preseason games. She did the game in Carolina, was her first one. She did the game in Nashville, and then she did the preseason finale in Florida. And I had a chance to kind of tune in and listen to at least the tail end of some of it while I was in my car driving home on those nights. And the difference for her from game one to game three was very, very noticeable. She sounded much more comfortable, and it's a great opportunity. You know, there's not a lot of females in this role, especially in hockey. Sherry Ross used to do it for the New Jersey Devils for a number of years. She was recently let go from the radio side, but she was providing color for the Devils broadcast. Mm-hmm. We certainly got very familiar with AJ Maleshko on NBC. She's a former U.S. Olympian, yep. Won a gold medal on the 98 U.S. Olympic women's hockey team. She was doing color for some of the playoff games with the Predators on NBC last year. So you're seeing it a little bit more, but it was actually in listening to AJ Maleshko in the postseason last year that Kaylee was like, hey, you know, maybe this is something I could do. And she was thinking at it from a television standpoint, but, Dave Mishkin came up with the idea, hey, why don't we talk about, maybe putting her on a radio broadcast and see how she does. And she did a fantastic job, I think, in those three games. And, I think that will not be the last time you hear her voice on the radio side.
Yes.
So we could see her maybe doing more road games.
There's been that discussion, yeah. And once the regular season starts and, the team doesn't head out on the road here for another couple mm-hmm. of weeks in late October, don't know exactly when we hear on the airwaves, but
leave it open, huh?
Hear again.
Yeah, this is so exciting, and I love that it was Dave Mishkin's kind of thought bubble that kind of got it going, too. That's very exciting for females everywhere. I don't know, Eric's probably like, yay, women.
She doesn't see herself as any kind of a trailblazer. And look, I mean, she's not the first going down the path, but there's not many. And
right.
She doesn't see herself in that role, but let's face it, she is.
And the other cool thing about Kaylee, since the first time we met her and her when she first got here, is she's making her own way. It's not, she doesn't, listen, her last name's Chelios. Maybe if you're, 12 or 13 listening to the show, you don't know what that means. But for most people, you know what that means. And it's so
she's not resting on that last name.
She works
she's doing
so
it.
Hard, and you always see her getting better and better and better. And she might not see herself as a trailblazer, but I really think that there's a lot of young girls out there that she's the one to look to.
Yeah, she is, because she's so young, so she has the potential of a very long career in this role. And if that's the case, I mean, you know, like I said, Sherry Roth did it for a number of years with the Devils. So this is not a new path, but she's branching off on her own path.
Yeah.
So she's walking trails that have been done before, but now she's creating her own path. And I think that's fantastic. I think it's fantastic for anybody who has any female who has an idea that, oh, this is a men's position you can't do. No, you're seeing a 25-year-old walk down this path, and absolutely you can do it.
Yeah, with so much poise too. Okay, so here we go. My finger on the dump button in case it gets really heated. I feel like all I need to say is Tom Wilson suspended again before the season even starts officially. So Eric, maybe give a little background on what happened, and then I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Okay, so if anybody didn't catch this at the tail end of the preseason, Tom Wilson delivered the exact hit the league is trying to get out of this league, and it's a blindside, across the ice, predatory headhunting hit. And it was disgusting to watch. It's disgusting to watch at any point in time. But knowing this was the preseason finale for both Washington and St. Louis, and the player he hit, Oscar Sundquist, is not a he's a player fighting for his opportunity to get in the NHL. There was zero reason to deliver that hit in any capacity, let alone in the way that he delivered it. It's sickening to see from a player who has walked this line for so long. And let's not forget, he was suspended in the playoffs.
Right.
He missed 3 playoff games for a similar type of head hit. 15 actual games from that suspension to this hit. And quite frankly, I applaud player safety for giving them a 20-game suspension. It's under appeal. I hope it doesn't get reduced. I have a feeling it's probably going to be reduced a little bit, but I hope it doesn't get reduced, because those type of hits, when you watch the videos that the league's PR department puts out and the type of hits they want to take out, this one checks every single box in what they're trying to eliminate. Blindside, unexpected, with speed, contact to the head. It's absolutely grotesque that a player like Tom Wilson, who just signed himself a nice, big, fat $5 million a year contract, does a hit like this in a completely meaningless game. And a message has to be sent. We've seen this with players in the past. With Matt Cook, it took him until he received a 20-game suspension to kind of clean up his game a little bit. Rafi Torres.
I was just about to say Rafi Torres.
It's so disgusting that these type of players continue to deliver these type of hits. No respect whatsoever, especially in that situation, because it's a player who's just fighting for his chance to get in the NHL, and he may have ended his career.
It's crazy.
Tom Wilson has been a missile ever since he stepped into this league as a first-round draft pick for the way that he plays the game. And we love the physicality in hockey. We don't like the type of physicality that he brings on occasions. There are clean hits he delivers, yes, but there are a lot more ones that are right on the line, and he tends to cross it over. And when players such as that continue to kind of be just slapped on the wrist for these type of hits, they're not going to get the message. So 20 games to me I think is fantastic. I hope they do not reduce it, because I don't think 10 would have been enough. I don't think it would have sent the right kind of message. 20 games sends the right kind of message.
What do you think the responsibility is of Washington at this point? Because they did re-sign him. They knew what they were getting. I mean, they see this guy all the time. You know, I think it's a bonehead. I always think of, you know, what would a guy like, you know, what would Coach Cooper do? You know, what would Joel Quenneville do? What would, you know, these really good coaches do if they're one of their, you know, quote, bigger name players get suspended in the playoffs? You know, and you're making a run for yourself. You know, what does it say that, you know, the Washington re-signs him? Fine. You wanted him. That's fine. He's not a bad hockey player. But now, okay, he's suspended 20 games. Is that enough, isn't it? Do you think a franchise has to say, dude, what is wrong with you?
Well, the culture of hockey is you don't throw a teammate under the bus. So you're never publicly going to get anybody on that Capitals team to say anything bad about Tom Wilson. Because we saw this a couple years ago, and it escapes me who it was. But there was a player that had delivered some of these type of hits, and one of the guys in his locker room said, yeah, you know, we'd like him to clean up. We'd like him not. And he got chastised for it. So you're not going to see anybody, at least publicly from a Washington standpoint, saying, I mean, I even saw the comments coming out the day the suspension was handed down. It's not nice to see the league make an example of Tom Wilson and all this. So, you know, you're seeing the support comments come out from his teammates. Internally, though, somebody has to have a conversation with him because, you know, you just got this nice contract. We need you on the ice.
Yeah.
We cannot have you, you know, if you want to be the quote-unquote protector of Kuznetsov and Ovechkin on that top line, you do no good being suspended in the press box for 20 games. You have to clean up your act. And there's a way to play this game and not cross over the line. Tom Wilson hasn't figured it out yet. Maybe this will help him down that line. Internally, you would like to see be the place where it gets corrected. But somebody on his team has to pull him aside, whether it's, you know, Todd Reardon or it's Brian McClellan, the general manager. Somebody has to pull them aside and say, you need to stop this because we need you on the ice.
Yeah, it's definitely a liability. And if I'm a coach of another team who's getting ready to play the Washington Capitals and I know that Tom Wilson's on the ice, it's not something where it's like, oh, we better not mess with his players because he's going to stand up for him. It's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely dangerous. You're right. He's gonna end somebody's career if he didn't already. It's going to happen if he doesn't clean up his act. And to me, that's the most disgusting thing in this, is that we love this game for the physicality, but when you make bonehead plays like he tends to do, you're going to ruin somebody's career and potentially somebody's life.
Yeah, and you think he knows better at this point. That's the thing. If you know better, do better. And I just don't know that he knows better, and maybe this 20-gamer...
I don't think he cares.
I don't know. I can't get into the mind of Tom Wilson. That's not...
Don't do it.
But that's just it, right? Like, he's not learning because he hasn't been told what he's doing is that egregious.
Yeah.
You know, okay, a 3-game playoff suspension, okay. It hurts your team. They still end up winning the Cup. So how much did that hurt them?
Right. Good point.
So that's why I think the 20 games is the right kind of message to send here, to clean up your act, or the next one's going to be 40.
Ooh.
And with that, I think we are done with Eric Erlandson now that he's all fired up.
Dump button.
No, I didn't. I didn't have to hit the dump button. But now that you're all fired up, we'll let you go. thank you so much for joining us. Please remind everybody where they can find all of your amazing content and hear you on a daily basis.
Yeah, lightninginsider.com is the website. The first thing you see on the panel that comes up is how to sign up. It's $40 a year or $4.99 a month for the same type of coverage I gave during my days with the Tribune.
Better coverage.
Let's see, a Lightning lunch 5 days a week on Lightning Power Play, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. On Twitter, it's at Eric, E-R-I-K underscore Erlandson, and it's E-R-L-E-N-D-S-S-O-N. And, of course, my Facebook page at facebook.com/Lightning Insider.
And I'll tell you, the best $40 you'll ever spend.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, and we can't wait to see you at the rink.
Okay, sounds good, ladies.
I could sit and talk to him for days.
He's so nice, and he's just great. And I you know, ran up and said, hey, don't forget, you're on the show with us. And he's like, I know. And then we're down together at the, you know, the press room, the mm-hmm. workroom and everything like that. He's such a nice person, and he's very knowledgeable, and you sure made him mad.
I know. I've never heard him, like, get riled up, really.
I know.
Anyway, so, yeah, we're home. For a nice long stretch.
It is a nice stretch. It is a nice stretch. And I think it's I don't want to say easy.
Don't say that.
I'm not going to say easy. But I think it's a favorable.
It's a favorable. Can I say that? You can ease into the season
I like
kind
it.
Of thing.
Yeah. I think, you know, they're going to play the Canucks Thursday. First of all, that's a big gap. I saw a lot of people kind of concerned with Tyler Johnson. Eric kind of covered it already in a segment. He could have gone, but why bother?
Yeah.
Because you play Saturday, you don't play again until Thursday.
Yeah.
So everybody, yay.
Get some extra practice in.
Excited.
Ease people into it.
Yeah. Then they're going to play Columbus on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hurricanes again on Tuesday. And then Thursday the 18th, they'll welcome in Detroit. And then they're going to hit the road for one of those kooky...
Western...
Yeah, kind
swings,
of. One kind of those weird...
Central Western
yeah. ones.
When I go to Vegas to see them play the Knights.
Yeah,
that's in
go.
That whole chunk right there.
It is.
And if you look at the end of the season, like mm-hmm. early April, we play like 3 road games against interesting teams. So it's like, it's nice that they're letting us ease into the season because the end of the season. I mean, if you look at the end of the season, if we're in contention for playoff spots, mm-hmm. those games could be super important.
Right.
So it's kind of nice that we get to ease into the season a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to put it. I feel like, you know, last year, as we talked about it, we did have the back-to-back with Florida. And mm-hmm. so it was like, oh, right out the gate, we're going. This is a little bit of an easement into it.
Right.
When you look at the first maybe month and a half. Right.
And even when most of the season started on Wednesday, you know, it took us a couple more days to even see some action. So, hey, I'll take it. Whatever we got to do, I'll take it. Plus, it kind of eases all the fans into going to the arena, you know, every couple nights.
You're only going to miss Callahan for a few, you know, he's ahead of schedule. Johnson's going to miss one game, maybe it looks like.
Yep.
So it's good.
Yeah. No,
this is an exciting team, you guys.
Oh, God. I'm a dork, and I record all the Sun Sports, Fox Sports, whatever coverage mm-hmm. of games, even when I'm there. And then I go home and I watch it.
That makes sense.
Because I love Paul Kennedy and I love Bobby the Chief Taylor and Dave Vanderchuk. Uh-huh. I love what they do. And, you know, home opener, I want to see what kind of stuff they were doing. And, you know, they have an opening sequence where they're like, reigning Norris Trophy winner, Vezina nominee, and like most wins in the regular season. And then you've got Steven Stamkos. And then you have Nikita Kucherov, who hit 100 points last season and probably will do more. And all of these riches, mm-hmm. and I'm getting chills talking about it. When you go to the rink every two nights or whatever to see your team play and you sit in the same seat if you're a season ticket holder, you kind of take it for granted a little bit. I know mm-hmm. I do. And so when the beginning of the season comes around and you're reminded of all the greatness that is on one team and the fact that we have maybe one guy who's brand new uh-huh. to a lineup, it's just nutty.
Think about this. You're not even talking about Braden Point. They're not even talking. It's
Anthony Cirelli and Matthew Joseph who had standout nights.
Like, but they're talking about Kucherov and Stamkos. It's like,
but we've got all these other guys.
Braden Point is like blowing the minds of people everywhere after last season.
Oh,
and it's like, it's such a great, great, well put together team.
It's just nuts.
And I'm going to say it now.
Oh, God. What?
I'm going to say it now.
Jeez, man.
This is...
Don't. I'm getting... Oh, just do it.
This is the year that Andre Palat becomes a finalist for the
Selke Trophy. Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
And I've noticed I've said that for like 4 years straight. But I'm telling you guys, this is the year. I feel it.
Clearly, Dory is no Miss Cleo. Because she's like, if I keep saying it every season, maybe one time it'll happen.
it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah, all eyes are on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Not just in Tampa Bay, but league-wide. We've got amazing superstars.
And we're used to it by now.
And we get to see them every home game.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy. Yep. So
it's basically a self-inclusive all-star team.
You know? Yeah. We're very lucky here in Tampa Bay to have some amazing hockey to watch. All right. So we're going to go for this week, but we'll be back next week like clockwork. In the meantime, you can follow us on all social media @GameMiz with a Z Conduct, and we will catch you at the rink.